This is Parenting in the 21st Century. I'm Jonathan Little. I'm speaking with Jeff Schott, who's executive director of the Youth Transition Network. You know, Jeff, I never took a course in parenting, and I'm convinced that my wife and I use the very parenting style that we observed in our own parents. I think you call that, parenting with rules and consequences or boundaries and consequences? That seemed to work for us. But why doesn't it work today?
You know, I wonder if it really worked for us. If we really were to stop and look back, how many of us were frustrated as adolescents with our parents? How many of us maybe thought to ourselves, I'll never do this to my kids. But then we have kids and we're not provided a different perspective or a different way to attack it. And so we fall back into doing exactly.
We do it and go, oh, my dad did that to me. I said I would never do that, and I just did it.
Exactly.
Because we were so conditioned to doing it that way.
Exactly.
It was automatic.
You know, and for a small percentage of parents, that was such a frustrating – or, you know, parents today was such a frustrating experience for them when they were young. They throw the pendulum to the opposite side of the spectrum and say, I'm just going to be a friend. I'm not going to create all this conflict and all of this angst that I went through. And, you know, I've found the truth is almost always in the middle.
So I want to be your friend as a parent doesn't work necessarily.
I think you want to have a relationship. You want to have influence. You want to be engaged. You want them to be able to talk with you about anything. You want to be able to interact about everything. So you have to have a relationship, but a friendship versus, let's say, a mentor. A friendship versus, let's say, a coach or a guide. And that's really important when that adolescent brain kicks in because of the oppositional nature. So much of what we've been trained to do as parents, taught to do, even by many of the parenting programs out there today, are focused on that boundaries and consequences structure. And that trips off the oppositional nature of the adolescent brain. It pushes them away from us. It often sends them from our research down the very paths we're trying to prevent them from taking.
So you're saying be a mentor, be a coach, not necessarily just a friend.
Correct. You know, be a shepherd. If we want to talk about it in a biblical context, mm-hmm. You know, all of our research dovetailed with the scriptures amazingly. Not with the Old Testament, but with Jesus and with the New Testament and with the leadership style of the Good Shepherd. He never called himself a great leader. He never called himself a king. He called himself the Good Shepherd. And the way he led worked really well with the pre-modern mindsets of the day. It works really well with the post-modern mindsets of the kids in the generations X and Y and et cetera today. And so if we'll adopt a leadership style that's based upon shepherding, that's based upon going before and going after the heart issues as opposed to looking and attacking the behavior, which is what the Old Testament was. Here's my law. Here's my sacrifices. Here's my rules. Here's my consequences. And it led to a silence of the prophets for 300 years. It didn't work too well. And then Jesus came along and wiped out all of those laws, wiped out all of those rules, and led in a completely different way, focused on the heart, focused on love.
And really replaced all the rules with love God and love your neighbor. Right?
Exactly. And so as we did the research and we realized what we were doing with our kids made us look nothing like Jesus to our kids, mm-hmm. That's when we started really saying, okay, how did he lead? What do we need to do differently? What can we find in the psychological and the adolescent brain research that aligns with that? And we started experimenting on my poor kids, trying to find a different way to do it because our daughter was shut down with us by age 9. And we didn't like what we saw. And we knew the rules and consequences weren't working with her. We knew that we needed something else. We didn't have anybody to tell us what else was. And so we began investigating. And it was a great journey. It was fun. It was a new way of thinking.
How long did you let it go on that you saw her behavior slightly off track? I'm really curious because I'm wondering when parents contact you, email you, call you, come to a seminar presentation, how long has this behavior been off track? And they finally arrived at the point where they said, we need help. We don't know how to do this.
Well, that's the challenge is we tend to wait too long. And, you know, our society as a whole is not very good at preventative. We're really good at reactive. Once we're really sick, we go to the doctor. Preventative medicine, not so much. Okay, same with parenting. We wait for things to get bad before we really look for answers. What we're hoping to do with parents is begin to help them see a different way when their kids are 4, 5, 6, 7, make the transition leading into adolescence so they never encounter the issues, so they don't have the adolescent battles. I know in our society we've decided that these issues with adolescents are going to exist no matter what we do, but that's not the case. It's not what our research is showing. It's not showing what some of the adolescent brain research is showing, and it's definitely not what the study Notre Dame did that concluded 69% of kids want more involvement. Adolescents want more involvement from their parents. You know, what that study didn't identify is what they want. And that's what we've gone about doing with our qualitative research.
Well, one of the few things, I guess, that I recall from an article or two I read on parenting when I was in the midst of parenting was that kids really do like boundaries. But I guess to extend that, they don't like the consequences, but they do like the boundaries. So we still need to say, these are the rules. We're not going to throw the rules out. We're going to say, these are the, you can go this far, but you can't go farther. Right?
Actually, we do it very differently.
Really?
Yeah. When we look at a kid and if we really stop and say, okay, my job is to not raise a child. We talk about raising children all the time. But I think our job's really to raise an adult, to develop an adult. And so our kids need to be able to establish their own boundaries. Our kids need to be able to establish and come to conclusions and make good decisions apart from our control, apart from our structure. You know, we've been taught in our society, you have high expectations for a kid and they'll perform well. What we're finding from talking to the kids, you know, one-on-one in small groups on videotaped interviews is the opposite. The expectations are actually leading to a sense that they're always falling short, that they can't measure up, that they can't succeed. And so many of them kaleidoscope on the inside related to themselves that they lose motivation in school. They lose motivation in the relationship with their family and their parents. And that's when the problems come.
So you can set expectations that are too high, but you have to set some expectations, right?
Well, we found the best strategy with an adolescent to be helping them identify their own goals and their own vision for their life. The kids that did absolutely the best in the research we saw, there were two or three things that were good indicators. One, the most amazing kids we talked to, like Lindsay in the research, had very, very different relationships with their parents than the vast majority of kids we talked to. Lindsay said when I asked, you know, tell me about the relationship with your parents, my parents are awesome. How many times do you hear that from an adolescent?
Wow.
Okay. So that was one indicator, was the nature of the relationship between the kid and the child. The second was, do they have their own vision for their future? If they have their own vision and some goals attached to that.
I mean, you're talking about a kid having a vision for their future when they're a teenager.
Yeah, or even at age 10, 11, there's those rare kids that know they want to be a dentist from age 10 or they want to be a firefighter. Okay, that's a small percentage, granted, but those kids in our research oftentimes avoided most, if not all, of the mess of the society, of the youth culture because they knew where they were going and they knew that going off course would derail them from what they wanted to achieve. And the strongest type of expectation, if you look at the definition of expectation in the dictionary, is it's an internal expectation of oneself. Okay, the number one definition is the hope or the desire for a particular event to happen. Okay, well, what is this? This is a kid at Christmas time. He knows the event's coming. He can't wait for that event to come. And the clock slows down. The calendar slows down. Mom, how many days till Christmas? Mom, how many days till Christmas? And that kid's got this strong internal expectation, internal desire for that event to happen. When kids, they have their own internal desire for who they want to be, where they want to go, the type of person they want to marry, the type of lifestyle they want to lead, and they have a vision of what they might want to do, all of a sudden, Yeah. Their potential is unleashed.
So you're saying parents need to be nurturing this from the time you get a sense that...
Age 5, 6, 7.
Okay.
You need to start drawing upon their internal desire for success. Everyone wants to succeed. Everyone hates failure, including kids. Somehow, as parents, we adopt this mindset that our kids are out to mess up their lives, and we've got to keep them from doing it. And when we do that, we create frustration, we create friction, we create distance in the relationship. They don't feel loved, believed in, trusted. And without trust, the relationship breaks down.
That's where it starts, right?
That's where the dual trust. Life and the mess can begin. And so if we'll realize our kids want to succeed, they don't want to mess up their lives, they want to develop a vision, they want to be motivated, they want to succeed, then when we draw upon that internal desire for greatness, internal expectation for achievement.
You're saying help them tap into their own potential when they're 8 or 9 or 10 years old. Yeah, not wait till they're 18 and going off to school.
6 or 7 years old. Okay, I mean, we have changed the culture of our family so much. You know, we had a very closed culture in our home. My 9-year-old didn't want to talk with us about anything. Okay, by the time our last two were coming along, you know, both boys, you know, I'm having very open discussions with them about, with my 7-year-old about pornography. Okay. Because I'm noticing he's getting curious because he's looking down his sister's shirt. and he walks in one day, my daughter's sitting there. I say, Paul, I notice you're getting curious about the female anatomy. Oh, no, I'm not. And I'm like, oh, come on, Pinocchio, joking. And he kind of giggles a little, but he's sheepish about this whole thing. And I said, you know, I'm curious, have you ever seen a naked picture of a woman? And he said no. And then he got a really sheepish look. And I'm like, what did you see? And he thought for a minute. And he told me. And I said, okay, I got a question for you. I want you to close your eyes right now. And I want to tell me if you can see that image. And he closed his eyes and he could see it. And his eyes popped open all shocked. And he goes, ah. And I talked about how programming that into his brain will make it difficult to find a woman that will satisfy him in the future, because you end up with all these ideal images. And I told him that I knew guys that needed a picture of a naked woman on the pillow next to their wife to get aroused. And I'm having this conversation with a 7-year-old. What was amazing is 3 years later, we're walking through a mall, happened to be going through Dillard's lingerie department. Amazing sign over to the right, you know, scantily clad gal. We're walking past this thing and I'm just watching to see what he's going to do. And he looks over it, he glances at it, looks away. We get past the picture and he looks up at me at age 10 and goes, blah. And I said, good job. You're self-managing. And that's one of the keys that we're working on, is how do we develop that internal desire to succeed, to achieve, to avoid the mess, not because I tell them they have to or else, but because they want to, because they're heading somewhere. Mm-hmm. They're heading towards greatness. And this stuff is going to derail them.
And I think what you share too is no topic is off limits. There'd be some households where at 7, if you made some discovery that he had seen a picture or whatever, or could have this picture in his mind, some parents would say, get that out of your head, you know. Don't think about that.
Well,
and you opened up.
Right. Well, worse than that, if you look at some of the popular parenting sites out there and your kid's caught doing pornography, they'll tell you to take the phone away for 3 months. They'll tell you to put the computer in the center of the room, put internet protection software on it, da-da-da-da. You know, come down on them, issue the consequences, okay, and that'll fix it. And so I had a mom come to me in an event, and she said to me, hey, I'm not too worried about my son. I'm really worried about my daughter. And I'm like, okay, what are you worried about with your daughter? Well, she sent a picture of herself naked from the waist up to a boy. This was a 12-year-old girl. And I said, oh, okay. And why aren't you, you know, but I think we've got it handled. And I said, how? And she told me. And I said, well, you know, I'm curious. I'm guessing to get desensitized to be willing to do that, she'd probably been viewing pornography for 12 to 18 months. Oh, pornography's not a girl's issue. So, well, flash news it is. Here's what I want you to do. Here's how I want you to talk to your daughter. Here's the promises I want you to make to her before you talk to her. And then here are the questions I want you to ask. By question three, she broke down crying and admitted she'd been doing pornography since she was 10. Okay, so gave her answers for that. Then I circled back around to the son. Well, we discovered he was doing pornography last year. And they did exactly what the internet sites did. They took the computer phone away, took the computer, did all that. I said, well, so you've got it handled. She goes, yeah, I think we've got it handled. I said, well, I got a question. Does he ever go to a friend's house? Does he have a Nintendo DS? Are you aware they're sharing pornography on flashcards, thousands of pictures that you can view on the Nintendo DS? No. Did you address the 2,000 images he's got stored in his brain and he can play with at any point in time? And she's looking at me and she goes, I guess we don't have it handled. And I said, I don't even think you've scratched the surface, because again, we're going after the behavior. We're not dealing with the root. Why did he feel the need to escape into pornography? What's going on inside of him? Is there hurt in the house? Is there distance in the relationship? He's trying to fill a void. Mm-hmm. What's the void? There's the answer.
If you don't get it at home, you go looking.
You can whack away at that all you want, but if you don't fix the void inside your kid, that bad attitude, that bad behavior, it's not going anywhere. Ask any addict that's been through addict recovery. It's not about whacking away at the behavior. It's about dealing with the root.
What's on the inside? This is Parenting in the 21st Century with Jeff Schott of Youth Transition Network. We'll be right back.